This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is heading back to Pyongyang next month to pave the way for a second U.S.-North Korea summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Pompeo met on the sidelines of the U.N. with North Korean counterpart Ri Yong-ho, a session described as positive that dealt with next steps toward denuclearization. In remarks Wednesday as he chaired a session of the Security Council, Mr. Trump said a lot is happening behind the scenes that is seen as positive.
I believe that Chairman Kim Jong-un, a man I have gotten to know and like, wants peace and prosperity for North Korea. Many things are happening behind the scenes, away from the media, which nobody knows, but they are happening nevertheless, and they are happening in a very positive way.
At a news conference, Mr. Trump dismissed the idea of reaching a deal by a certain date.
I don't want to play the time game. I told Mike Pompeo, don't let them do that to you. I haven't given anything. And not Mike, but our guys were being, oh, well, we're working as fast. I said, I got all the time in the world. I don't have to rush it. There's no, you know, cessation of sanctions. We got the sanctions on. I didn't take any sanctions on.
Mr. Trump, who met with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore in June, said the two countries have a wonderful relationship and the timing and location of a second summit will be made public in the near future. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta told the UN General Assembly, denouncing corruption, what he called the trust deficit in rigged economic systems, and appealed for greater African representation on the Security Council.
Kenya joins in the demand for two permanent seats for Africa, as well as additional non-permanent seats.
Mr. Kenyatta said Africa is underrepresented in international organizations, calling it a historic injustice. This is VOA News. At the Security Council meeting chaired by President Trump Wednesday, he accused China of trying to influence the outcome of the upcoming U.S. election.
They do not want me or us to win because I am the first president ever to challenge China on trade. And we are winning on trade. We are winning at every level. We don't want them to meddle or interfere in our upcoming election.
China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi told the council his government has not and will not interfere in any country's domestic affairs and refused to accept what he called any unwarranted accusations against China. A White House official said China's interference in politics, media, and business has reached an unacceptable level. Vice President Mike Pence is to deliver a speech on the matter next week. President Trump met Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Wednesday on the sidelines of the General Assembly, indicating he supports a two-state solution to the Israel-Palestinian conflict.
That's what I think works best. I don't even have to speak to anybody. That's my feeling. Now, you may have a different feeling. I don't think so. But I think two-state solution works best.
He also said a long-anticipated peace plan by his administration will be unveiled in the next 2 to 3 months. A Palestinian spokesman said a two-state solution must be based on 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as the capital of a future Palestinian state. In Libya, a new ceasefire has been reached, ending a month of fighting among rival militia in and around the capital, Tripoli. More than 100 were killed, hundreds more wounded. President Trump said Wednesday all options are on the table regarding Venezuela. He announced Tuesday new sanctions on members of President Nicolas Maduro's inner circle as an international campaign to force changes in the Latin country continue. Mr. Maduro arrived Wednesday at the UN headquarters as Canada and six Latin American nations called on the International Criminal Court to open an investigation into rights abuses in Venezuela. President Trump was asked Wednesday why he rejected a request by Canada's prime minister for a meeting, even as the two sides spar over a new free trade agreement.
Because his tariffs are too high and he doesn't seem to want to move. And I've told him, forget about it. And frankly, we're thinking about just taxing cars coming in from Canada. That's the mother load. That's the big one. We're very unhappy with the negotiations and the negotiating style of Canada.
The U.S. set a Sunday deadline after reaching a similar agreement with Mexico, a third party in the North American free trade regime. Mr. Trump cited Canada's resistance to lowering barriers on its dairy industry. At the same time, Mr. Trump met Wednesday on the sidelines of the U.N. with Japan's Prime Minister Abe, saying the U.S. and Japan are starting talks on a bilateral free trade agreement, citing his unhappiness with the current trade imbalance. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A nationwide strike for a better minimum wage gets underway today in Nigeria.
The current minimum wage, which came into force in 2011, is 18,000 naira per month. In 2011, that was about $120.
Peter Ozo Isan is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. We'll have a conversation with the new U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. King Umswati III of Eswatini defends his country's electoral process, and Liberian President George Mahama Weah seeks international support for his pro-poor development agenda.
Our pro-poor agenda is therefore designed to give power to the people, promote economic diversification, protect sustainable peace, and encourage good governance. We appeal to our friends to support this agenda.
Kenyan police make arrests due to tribal clashes in the Rift Valley region, and Nigerian wives and mothers of detainees say their husbands are not members of Boko Haram. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A nationwide strike to demand a better minimum wage gets underway today in Nigeria. The Nigeria Labour Congress has called on all public and private institutions, banks, schools, public and private businesses to shut down in support of this strike. The current minimum wage in Nigeria is $50. Peter Ozo Isan is Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He says the purpose of the strike is to force the federal government to finalize negotiations for a new minimum wage of $139.
Actually, we're calling a warning strike to protest the non-conclusion of the work of the Tripartite Committee on the National Minimum Wage. The last minimum wage review was done in 2010, and it came into force in 2011. The understanding we had with government was that the minimum wage will be reviewed every 5 years. We have been pushing for the review of the minimum wage. Eventually, the government set up a tripartite committee made up of representatives of government, representatives of workers, and representatives of private sector employers. The committee worked very seriously at the point of concluding its work in order to submit a report to government. When the representative of government, the Minister of Labor, suddenly came in and said we could not conclude because government was insulting into determining what figure of minimum wage they wanted to propose. And that has therefore stalled the work. All this would have been concluded by August, and that the new minimum wage should come into effect this month. Our strike has been called after giving the government a 14-day ultimatum to reconvene the committee to conclude its work. And when that expired today, and therefore we've decided that there will be a general strike across the country.
What is the current minimum wage in Nigeria, and what is the new wage that you are requesting?
The current minimum wage, which came into force in 2011, is 18,000 naira per month. In 2011, that was about $120. Today, it is less than $50. We propose a new minimum wage, about 66,000 naira. But once the tripartite committee was set up, we take into consideration all the submissions from employers using the principles of ability to pay, the cost of living in a situation and all that. And we should arrive at a figure which we will recommend to government. But the government has curtailed this process and delayed it unduly. And that's why we're embarking on this strike.
What do you say to those who say that your demand is unrealistic?
Those who say so, I think they are not informed. because we do not drop egos out of your house. If you pay a monthly minimum wage that is unable to meet the transportation costs of the worker to go to work and return, then who is being unrealistic?
Peter Ozo Eson is the Secretary General of the Nigeria Labour Congress. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Liberian President George Mani Weah says his historic election in 2017 is a change for youthful leadership. Weah said while the challenges of leadership are enormous, he sees his election as an opportunity to make things better for the Liberian people. Speaking Tuesday at the ongoing 73rd UN General Assembly in New York, Mr. Weah called on the international community to support his government's pro-poor five-year national development program.
This is not an agenda only for the poor. It is for the benefit of all Liberians. But it is a policy framework that gives priority to the alleviation of poverty, and its core objectives and focus is to reduce the marginalizations of the most vulnerable, whilst at the same time creating a conducive atmosphere for the middle and upper income Liberians to grow and prosper. We want to build a harmonious society based on the goal of economic empowerment, especially for the underprivileged. Our proper agenda is therefore designed to give power to the people, promote economic diversification, protect sustainable peace, and encourage good governance. We appeal to our friends, bilateral partners, and private investors to support this agenda. Being conscious of the importance and impact of infrastructure on social and economic development, my government has identified investment in roads, energies, and ports as our key priority, and it is therefore soliciting funding and other technical expertise to undertake these projects in pursuit of our goal to connect our cities and towns and strengthen our economy.
President Weah said Liberia is now in charge of its own security following the withdrawal last year of the United Nations peacekeeping mission after 15 years of maintaining the peace in Liberia. He thanked the United Nations for the sacrifices the world body made in securing peace in Liberia after the country's long civil war.
Madam President, my country has finally turned the corner with more years of peace than preceding years of war, guided by our peace agreement signed in Accra 15 years ago. We thank the members and the Security Council of the United Nations for the UNMEER peacekeeping mission, which brought stability and helped us rebuild our institutions and communities. We are a peacekeeping success story, and we are grateful for the support given.
Liberian President George Mani Weah speaking Tuesday at the 73rd United Nations General Assembly in New York. King Mswati III of the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, says elections in his country are free and fair, but the country's constitution bans all political parties and anyone associated with parties from participating in elections. African Union observers the last week's parliamentary elections called on the government to lift the ban on political parties. But King Mswati III, speaking Tuesday at the UN General Assembly, said election in Eswatini is enshrined in the country's constitution and the culture of the country.
Madam President, just a few days ago, the people of the Kingdom of Eswatini held a very peaceful national election, which was free and fair. We are glad that international observers were in attendance to monitor the elections, and their conclusions were in line with our expectations. During the elections, the people nominated candidates in their chiefdoms to compete at constituency level, which call dinkundla. The system ensures direct participation and promotes participatory democracy among our people. It is homegrown and is enshrined in our customs, traditions, and constitution. We fully support the participation of women in political decision-making positions and have recently enacted the Election of Women Members to the House of Assembly Act to ensure their representation in Parliament.
Like most other African leaders who spoke at the ongoing 73rd UN General Assembly, King Mswati III called for a reform of the United Nations, including two permanent seats for Africa on the Security Council with veto power.
Madam President, it is unfortunate that the African continent continues to absorb more peacekeeping missions than any other United Nations regional grouping. This qualifies Africa proper representation in areas of peace and security, making it a key player as when matters of peace and security are discussed in all structures of the United Nations. We therefore plead that Africa should not be left behind. Her voice must be heard and featured prominently and permanently at the United Nations. As negotiations of reforms of the United Nations Security Council progress, the Kingdom of Eswatini calls for favorable consideration of the common African position and also for those countries that are not members of the Security Council. Africa calls for the allocation of not less than two permanent seats with all the prerogatives and the privileges of permanent membership, including the right of veto and five non-permanent seats in the United Nations Security Council.
That was King Mswati III of the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland. He spoke Tuesday at the 73rd UN General Assembly. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 27th. Daybreak Africa time, 17:30 past the hour. Recent positive changes in Zimbabwe and Angola serve as proof of what enlightened leadership can accomplish in Africa. That's the word of newly appointed U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Tibor Nagy. Nagy is the former ambassador to Ethiopia and Guinea. He's also held several diplomatic posts in Southern and West Africa. VOA's Africa 54's head, Adams Fitzpatrick, sat down with Ambassador Nagy in New York to talk about the future of America's relationship with Africa. She began by asking him whether the U.S. is satisfied with developments in the Democratic Republic of Congo ahead of that country's December 23rd elections.
Oftentimes, it's assumed that the United States supports opposition candidates in all of these African elections. The absolute truth is, and I can't underline this strongly enough, that the United States has no candidates in any election. Our only candidate is always the process. As long as the process is fair, transparent, and the elections are credible. This is what we would like to see. I think this is what most of the international community would very much like to see, that the people of the DRC have a choice, a real choice, in electing their next leader.
Are you happy with what you're seeing so far?
Let me put it this way. I have gone from being pessimistic to being more agnostic. Oftentimes, unfortunately, people are focused on the day of the elections. And often the day of the elections go off fine, but the pre-electoral period is critically important to make sure that all eligible voters are allowed and have a chance to register. And of course, in the post-electoral period, as to how that unfolds, to make sure that the right person is inaugurated who was elected by the people.
Let's move now to Zimbabwe, where we have actually had an election, and we have seen the transfer of power from one individual to another, albeit within the same party. The United States, along with the international community, were instrumental in, really through international sanctions, isolating Robert Mugabe's Zimbabwe. It seems that change appears to be on the horizon. So what is the United States willing now to do to help rebuild Zimbabwe and help it reintegrate into the family of prosperous nations?
We sure hope that real change is on the horizon, because the fact is that Zimbabwe could be one of the stars of Africa. There's almost not a sector that Zimbabwe could not excel at. What is key now is real action. The legislation and sanctions against Zimbabwe are quite specific and also specific in what needs to be done to, again, open up that space. If these steps come into being, then I would become a huge cheerleader with the U.S. business sector to say, absolutely, you know, this has happened now, so look at Zimbabwe as a possibility for investment, because at the end of the day, it's not going to be any amount of international development assistance that will move a country from, you know, low-income developing to middle-income. It's going to be foreign direct investment. We see that over and over again, you know, throughout the world, because there's massive amounts of international capital looking for good places to invest. But for that, the business community needs transparency. They need to know that it's a corruption-free environment and that they can get a fair return on their investment.
Thibault Nash is the new U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. Police in Kenya have arrested 9 people over tribal clashes in the country's Rift Valley region. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the clashes, which began since Sunday, have left an unknown number of people dead.
We need justice.
This community cannot die when you're still alive.
Narok and Nakuru counties have now been deemed no-go zones for locals because of dusk to dawn curfew imposed due to ongoing tribal clashes. Speaking yesterday, Wednesday, Interior Cabinet Secretary Fred Matiang'i said the ministry has increased the number of security personnel in clash-torn areas of Mau region, Narok County, with instructions for those behind the skirmishes to be arrested. Matiang'i said the ministry has information that some individuals were mobilizing youths armed with bows and arrows to attack the residents.
And the full force of the law will be met by those who are trying to engage in the kind of nonsense they're engaging in. We poisoned arrows, they have woken up from their houses and found the arrows in their kitchens and they're moving around with them. This thing is being supported by some people. And the law will face them regardless of their status. They will all be arrested. You will not use human life as political nonsense.
The Interior Minister says the skirmishes have cost the security team a lot of resources and that the deployment of officers in areas will continue until normalcy is restored. In a press conference on Wednesday, Narok County Commissioner George Natembeya says the 9 suspects arrested will be arraigned in court today, Thursday. He says the attacks were organized and that investigations with the help of those arrested will unearth the source of funding and the people involved.
We will ensure that the directive given by the regional commissioner to restrict locals to be outside past 6 p.m. and before 6 a.m. will be enforced. We don't want the Mau Forest to become a tool for livestock that have been stolen. To add some more police officers, because the officers at the area are currently understaffed and even the area is very remote with no access to good roads, vehicles, poor network, and therefore hindering the police operations to contain the situation.
The tribal clashes in Kenya have always been associated with what has been called historical injustices. And according to security expert George Msamali, the clashes can only stop if there is a political goodwill. He says most tribal clashes are well organized and funded.
There's always incitement from the political class.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, if you look at the sharing of resources within Kenya, it has always been that the ruling class have always been pushing other people away from the resources. As much as you're saying that, yes, there's that political incitement, this matter of historical injustices has to be dealt with once and for all.
Recently, some political leaders from the affected areas of Mau Forest, Narok, Molo, and Nakuru have been quoted in media uttering inciting words. But Msamali says for Kenya to curb tribal clashes, especially in pastoralist areas, the government must implement the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission report of Kenya.
TJRC report that so far has not been implemented. It clearly told Kenyans that we have these matters where some communities have been denied resources, where some communities have been pushed out of their ancestral land. But it's the politicians who are supposed to implement the TJRC report. And if they don't implement that, definitely we are not going to see an end of these clashes very soon.
The clashes erupted when the government began carrying out phase 2 of evicting people living illegally in Mau Forest. It is alleged that phase 2 involves wealthy people who bought the land and are using tribal clashes to divert attention from the real cause of chaos in Mau Forest. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Emorino Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
More than 1,000 women in the northeastern Nigerian state of Borno are appealing to the government to free their husbands and sons who have been detained for years on suspicion of being members of Boko Haram. The women say they have not received any information about the whereabouts of their loved ones. Chika Odua reports from Maiduguri in Borno state.
The thumping is a familiar sound. Children's bare feet slapping the earth. Brothers and sisters are playing a game of igala-gala. It's similar to hopscotch. The kids jump around, but they know that two people are missing. Their older brothers, Dunoma and Abuna. Their mother, who asks to be called Bintu for fear of being harmed by Nigerian security forces, explains what happened to her sons in 2013. She says, one night, soldiers came around 3 a.m., hitting our door and asking, "Where are the boys? Where are the boys? Bring out your sons." Soldiers were going around picking up children, and we mothers followed. Then they told the children to lie down in the ground, and they were beating them. The soldiers took away Dunoma and Abuna, who were then high school students. Bintu has not seen them since. In the early days of the Boko Haram insurgency, untold numbers of people were rounded up by security forces on suspicion of having links to Boko Haram. Rights groups heavily denounced the indiscriminate arrest, so the military slowed them down. But to date, many of those arrested remain in detention. Hamsatu Alamin, a local activist, goes around looking for mothers and wives whose husbands and sons are missing. She calls their cases forced disappearances. She has now created a network for the women. More than 1,000 are members.
We have in fact built their capacity. They are willing to speak anywhere.
Some of the women spoke in a campaign video that was released on social media. In the video, they described the circumstances of how their sons and husbands were taken. The women also wrote an open letter to President Muhammadu Buhari this year, pleading to be reunited with their loved ones. The military has repeatedly denied cases of forced disappearances. At one of the largest refugee camps in the area, Dalori Camp, something special is happening. A mother is crying. Her son, who was detained in the nearby military barracks, has just been released, and he's meeting his mother for the first time in years. It's an emotional reunion. Mother and son are holding hands. Other women come to congratulate the woman. Bintu hopes that one day she'll see her sons too, but she's received a disturbing report. She says, one boy who used to be in the Giwa military barracks told me that yes, my sons were there in the same barracks.
Fastika Odua reporting from Maiduguri in Nigeria, Borno State. And that's it for this Thursday, September 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, can Africa win the war on corruption? The African Union has declared 2018 the African Year of Anti-Corruption, charting a battle plan to win the fight against corruption on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.